Hi guys, Barry Cook from the Chonggi Kwan. A question that I get asked quite a lot is, how was the Chonggi Kwan formed? How did it come about? I think to answer this, we need to give a bit of context. So if we look at a little of my martial arts history, it will bring us up to how we've come to have the system that we have today. So I started my martial arts career in 1979 when I was 9. And I started by going to a judo class. Now, the judo sessions were great sessions, great starting sessions for anyone who wants to get involved in martial arts, because it really teaches a lot about strength and awareness of people's weight and how to use a person's own weight against them. And when you're 9 and you don't know very much, it's really just done as a form of game. And yet the foundations for actual skills were being planted quite firmly. So it really was a good art to start in. And I continued in judo for 3 years till 1982. So that took me from my last years in primary school into the first or second year of high school. And it was around 1982 that a friend of mine in the judo class said that he was going to try jiu-jitsu, Japanese jiu-jitsu. And after a week or two, when he was coming into school and telling me what they were doing and how the training was, I thought it sounded great. So I thought I wouldn't mind going to have a look at that myself. And when I went along, what I noticed immediately was that a lot of the throws, the takedowns, and the groundwork, sort of submissions and tap-outs and all of the groundwork stuff, was exactly what I'd just done in judo. I didn't realize at the time that jiu-jitsu was just judo, but with strikes. So there was kicking and punching, and also a lot of martial arts weapons work. So those three things weren't part of judo. And I thought, I'd really love to try this. So I asked my family if I could change from judo to jiu-jitsu. And they thought it was great. Yeah, if I want to change over to something else, you know, that was great with them. I'd earned my first degree in judo at that point in 1982. So at the beginning of 1982, that's when I got my first dan, and about 4 months later, that's when I sort of left and joined jiu-jitsu, Japanese jiu-jitsu. I stayed in jiu-jitsu for about 4 years till 1986, and it was about that time in 1986 when I started to get a lot more schoolwork, because GCSEs had just started, so there was a lot more work coming in. So in 1986, as my GCSEs started, it was around that time that I thought I need to take a little bit of a break from training and focus on this. And I'd already achieved my second dan in jiu-jitsu by that point. I got my first dan in 1985. And then a year later, I took my junior second dan. And then after taking a short break whilst doing my GCSEs, I thought, I don't like this not training thing. I need to be in martial arts. Whatever I do outside of martial arts as a career, I can't have something that takes me away from training. So about after having about 3 weeks off, I thought, all right, I need to go back. But then I thought, maybe I should take a break from all the throws being thrown on my back and all the wrestling and the pinning and all of that side of things, which I just had for the past 7 years in judo and jiu-jitsu. So I thought what I did like about jiu-jitsu was the kicking and the punching. So I thought maybe I could try something that just focuses on those two things. So I thought I'll look at karate. And there was a local Shotokan karate school near to me. So I thought I'd go and have a look at that. None of my friends were doing that. So I went along on my own at 16 in 1986. And it was great. It was completely different. The philosophy, the way the instructor spoke to the students, it was a lot more adult and it was a lot more serious and powerful. Everyone seemed really strong and dynamic. So I thought, right, this is where I'd like to start now. So that was 1986. I carried on in Shotokan for the next 4 years till 1990. And again, I passed my first Dan in Shotokan in 1989. And then the following year, in 1990, I took my second Dan. And I thought at that point that this was the art I was going to stay in because I wasn't being thrown so much, although there were some takedowns and quite a lot of sweeps. And unlike jiu-jitsu and judo, there were no mats, so every time we were thrown or taken down, it was onto a hard floor. So that was a bit harder. Also, I wasn't a junior anymore. I was 17, 18, and 19, so I was training as an adult, which was also a bit of a shock. But it was all great. I loved the training. I loved the bruises. Everything about it was great. But then, in 1990, something caught my eye, and having trained for the last 11 years or so, I was aware of Taekwondo, but there was never a school close enough to me to train at. But I was aware of how it was all about kicking and flexibility and dynamic, spectacular aerial displays when they do demonstrations, and I'd seen the Koreans do things. And I thought, well, I'd love to go and take a look at that and maybe ease off some of the hands as much as when we were doing karate, and maybe something a little more relaxed and speed based rather than power based and tension based in karate. So when a school opened near to me in 1990 when I was 20, I thought, that's great, I'll go and have a look. And before that lesson had finished, I knew this was the art that I had to be in, whatever else. So I spoke to the instructor. I explained that I'd trained for a while and had grades in judo, Japanese jiu-jitsu, and Shotokan karate, and I asked if I could come along and train. And he was more than welcoming and you know, asked me to come in and take part and try a class. And I thought, well, at 20 years old, you know, maybe I should start to settle into an art by now. And I did. That was the one for me. So from 1990 till 2003, I was focused purely on Taekwondo. And that's what I did for the majority of my training. There was a short spell for a couple of years where in the middle of my Taekwondo training, I started to train in Hapkido. And this was because a lot of people seemed to combine the two arts from some people that I'd spoken to and from some literature that I'd read and videos that I'd seen. A lot of people combined Korean Jiu-Jitsu, if you like, with Hapkido, with Taekwondo. So I did some Hapkido for a while and then went back to focusing purely on Taekwondo. And then in 2003, when I was 33, my instructor asked me if I would open a Taekwondo club. And I really didn't want to be a teacher at that time. I'd been a martial arts student for so long that I just didn't have any aspirations of teaching. I just wanted to focus on training myself and just walking the path as a student. But my instructor was quite insistent, and he believed that I could offer a lot to students and the Taekwondo community overall. And so he encouraged me to open a school, and I did. So 2003, 33 years old, and I opened my school. About 2 years later, in 2005, when I was 35, it occurred to me that everything I was teaching to the students was, I can't really think of the word, but it was lacking. I was finding that when you stick to a single philosophy, that it's lacking. You're having to miss things out that could be in there and that could work better. So I noticed when I did jiu-jitsu, when I moved into karate, there were things that we did in jiu-jitsu that I couldn't do in karate. And the same when I moved into taekwondo, there were things from karate and jiu-jitsu that I couldn't do in taekwondo. So it occurred to me that if you're just staying within your own art and fighting people within your own art, then that's great. But if you're entering open championships and fighting across systems, or if you're training for self-defense purposes where people are going to attack you with anything, then it occurred to me that no single art has everything. And therefore, by limiting yourself to practicing only one style is limiting your defensive capabilities. You're inhibiting yourself from not having knowledge that you could have. So from 2005 onwards, I started to develop a method or a philosophy that would incorporate the martial arts that I'd done and the information and education that I'd been given, and try to put that into one philosophy that I could teach as its own philosophy. What I was very conscious that I didn't want to do was reinvent the wheel. I didn't want to invent a new martial arts style. What I wanted to do was have a philosophy or a method or a system of training that gave the students access to unlimited techniques, so that they would never be in a situation where they're in class and if they do a sweep, you know, they have to hold back and think, oh, I can't do this or I can't do that. The students are exposed to any technique and every technique, and from practicing that limitless way, they can physically and psychologically decide what techniques work for them and what doesn't, and they can get rid of anything that hinders their performance, anything that they don't need or clouds or stops them from performing at their best, and just keep what they can utilize for maximum effect to give success in an encounter. So from 2005 to 2007, that's what I did, putting that together, working out how I was going to be able to teach that as a philosophy and to make it accessible to the general public. And once it was all done, at the end of 2006, finally in 2007, when I was 37, I opened the school. I changed the school from Taekwondo, and the next day the school was opened as the Chonggi Kwan. And from then onwards, from 2007 till 2019 and moving forwards, that's the art that we've been teaching ever since. So really it was just an amalgamation and a culmination of all the education that I'd had in martial arts, and by stripping away what I thought was just classical mess and choreography, taking that all out and stripping it right back to the essentials of effective striking, effective grappling, effective locking, all the techniques that are effective and would give students the maximum chances of success in an encounter. And once that's all put together and the classical mess is removed, students can then just really focus on allowing themselves to train in a limitless way. So that's when the motto came up for the school, which is limitless technique. So that's how it came about. So what I'll do in a future video is try to break down a little bit of how the Chung Yi Kwan works, what we teach, how we teach, and the whole aspect of how students begin and move forwards in the style. But really this video, this podcast, was just to give a brief breakdown of how the Chung Yi Kwan came about and why it came about. As usual, if you have any questions or comments, please leave them below and I'll try to address them in future podcasts. And until then, I'll see you next time. Take care.